the volume.
The Colin Cowherd Podcast brought to you by FanDuel. It's never been easier to play fantasy on FanDuel. Whether you love basketball, golf, soccer, or any fantasy sport, there is a contest for every fan. FanDuel, more ways to win. Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Friday Morning Podcast. Dave Wannstedt, who was the defensive coordinator for those Jimmy Johnson Cowboy Super Bowl winning teams. He's got great Jimmy stories and great Jerry stories, and he'll be joining us in about 5 minutes. But as always, it's time for fake questions, real answers. Lots of stuff I want to talk about. I don't want to wait for you to ask me. Here we go. Dear Colin, you hear Texas and Oklahoma are considering joining the SEC. Doesn't this just further prove what you've been saying about the Pac-12 being totally and utterly weak and in the dark? Great question. Yes, it does. The bigger issue, though, and we're seeing this in global sports, and we saw it with the English Premier League and the Italian League and the Spanish League, is the top dogs in these leagues are tired of splitting revenue with the weaker teams. Texas and Oklahoma carry the conference. And as the money has grown, dominating brands are tired of sharing revenue. So Notre Dame was way out in front of everybody. They were the first gigantic brand who refused to be in a conference and kept all their money. I think Texas should go independent. I told USC athletic director Mike Bone and Pat Hayden, his predecessor, you guys should go independent. Just schedule UCLA and Stanford and Cal every year and keep them happy. The reality here is this is now a global movement for dominating sports brands to keep a higher percentage of the money they make for their respective conferences. I don't blame Texas and Oklahoma, but I would caution both. Texas has three Big 12 championships in 25 years. Right now, you'd be about the sixth or fifth best football program in the SEC. Dear Colin, people constantly bash the NBA for low finals ratings. They just don't get it, right? No, they don't. When ratings are down, it doesn't hurt leagues. It hurts their network partners, CBS, ESPN, NBC, ABC, Fox, because networks have to do what they call make goods if you don't hit a certain rating. The leagues always get guaranteed all their money. It doesn't hurt the NBA if the ratings are down. It hurts their broadcast partners when their ratings are down because they make certain promises to Mountain Dew and Pepsi and Ford and Chevy that will get so many viewers. And if you don't, it's called make goods. You have to give away spots that you had previously negotiated to sell. Remember, folks, the Spurs were a dynasty. The 2003 Spurs Nets, the 2007 Spurs Cavs finals got numbers right in line with this year's finals. And you know what happened to the NBA? They have since more than quadrupled their television revenue. Right now, the only thing keeping the lights on at broadcast companies is live sports. The NBA is asking for three times in the current negotiations for what they make now, and they will get it. This is why I rolled my eyes at all this concern for a slight ratings decrease in the NFL over the Colin Kaepernick taking a knee. What is Fox without the NFL? What is CBS without the NFL? What is NBC without the NFL? We need it to keep the lights on. The leagues always get the money they want. Dear Colin, what's the strangest sports city in America right now? Well, without question, it's Milwaukee. You have the most grateful athlete versus the least grateful, Giannis and Aaron Rodgers. Giannis is all gratitude. Aaron's all attitude. It's a winner versus a whiner. The thing about Aaron that I'm kind of shocked by, that people keep defending him in the media. Aaron acts as if he's not surrounded by quality talent. Last year, PFF, end of the year rankings, Green Bay O-line, second in the NFL to Cleveland. This year, Pro Football Focus already has put out their 2021 player rankings. They tend to be reasonably close. Receiver Devontae Adams, 5th overall. Cornerback Jaire Alexander, 14th. David Bakhtiari, tackle, top 15. Aaron Jones, 6th best running back. Defense, ranked 9th at the end of last year. This idea that Aaron is not surrounded by competent talent. Outside of Patrick Mahomes and Brady, who in this league has a better setup than Aaron Rodgers? The Packers have never had institutional chaos in the last 25 years. A third of the league has. Finally, dear Colin, the NFL is now ruling that if you don't get vaccinated and an outbreak starts because of you on a team, the team takes a loss and you will not be paid. Your reaction? Listen, there's an old saying, ignorance is bliss. It is, unless your ignorance becomes my problem. Unvaccinated Americans are now vaccinated people's problem. My entire life, 75% of the country has had to pull 25% of the country to the right side of an issue, whether it's gay marriage, seat belts, race relations, marijuana laws. There's just a quarter of this country, sometimes up to about a third, that is less free-thinking, embedded on the wrong side of an issue, rigid, stubborn, and sometimes, unfortunately, ignorant. Seatbelts. People argued for years that they were an infringement on personal freedoms. Seriously, you don't have a right not to wear a seatbelt. That's why cars, when you start them, a beep goes off until you put it on. My entire life, this has been America. 75% of the country has to drag 25% screaming and kicking to the right side of an issue. We're all part of a society. We have rules and laws and safety measures that help us get along and protect each other. Red lights, stop signs, speed limits. When you ignore those, you put people in danger. The NFL is now going to force teams to forfeit a game if they have a COVID outbreak from unvaccinated players. The NFL is telling everybody, ignorance is no longer bliss when it affects not just the ignorant. Well, he's one of my favorite guys and one of the best storytellers we have. Fox NFL analyst Dave Wannstedt, former Bears and Dolphin head coach, defensive coordinators for Super Bowl 27 win, Pittsburgh head coach for a half decade. And this week there was a story where Jerry Jones came out and acknowledged he's the one that screwed up the Cowboys dynasty with Jimmy Johnson. And I think it's something that I've understood, Jimmy understood. Dave, I've never even asked you this question before, but I mean, it's fairly obvious from my purview that basically when Jerry bought the Cowboys, he had to get the finances right. So he spent the next 2 years in his side of the building. Jimmy and you had to get the football operation right, and you were on your side of the building. But my feeling was always once the Cowboys started winning a Super Bowl, Jimmy was getting all the credit, and Jerry wanted to have fun with his toy, and he had gotten by that time the finances right, the money was pouring in. Is that a too simplistic look at what happened?
No, I think that, number one, Jerry played football, right? He had a son, Stephen, who was a quarterback at Arkansas, and Jerry was very involved with the program, watching practices. He had an office that looked right down in Fayetteville, looked right down on the office. So he was a football business guy. He wasn't Wayne Huizenga, who I worked for at the Dolphins, who was worried about starting another Fortune 500 company. And that's all we cared about. So Jerry, I think that football part of it, but I sat there, what you're talking about, and I remember Jerry saying to Jimmy, "Hey, Jimmy, you know, I've invested everything and cashed out all I got. So between the two of us, you know, we've got to make this thing go." So I've never let that thought leave my mind when I see Jerry Jones and I hear some of the things, because I was there. I mean, I know how invested he was. To your point, where did it go astray? the first 2 years, there was not, I mean, Jerry was doing the marketing and he was organizing TV stations. He was bringing the Blue Star, his own TV show, and everything right into the Cowboys facility so we wouldn't have to go out. He was looking at how we could make a buck, changing the advertisement, all that stuff. And I can remember when it happened. It was our last year. It was a Super Bowl year. And traditionally, we would head out for a jog around noon. And Jimmy always kind of wanted his, he believed that you got more done in a social situation than you did sitting around a boardroom, because guys would relax a little bit, say some things that they might not say otherwise. And everybody, and we would still get it done. So we would take these jogs 2 or 3 days a week. We'd run a couple miles and walk back. And it was all football. Who we playing? What's going on? Was it draft? Was it summer training camp? Was it season? And we're heading out, getting ready to go. And Jimmy come walking out of the locker room, and he did his press conference right before this. And he walks out, and they're setting up tables and chairs all through this one press meeting area. And I can remember like yesterday, Jimmy turned and was asking the guys who were setting it up, what's going on? And they said, Jerry's having a press conference. And he said, he is, Dizzy, and had no idea. The week before that, I don't know, I think it might have been Troy. We turned the ball over 2 or 3 times. And one of the questions to Jimmy Johnson was, Troy Aikman had a couple turnovers. You know, is it? And Jimmy said, let me just say this. Whether it's Troy Aikman, Michael Irvin, Emmitt Smith, Jay Novacek, our tight end, if you turn the football over, we can't win and you're not going to play. Well, 2 hours later in the press conference, it comes out and they ask Jerry, you know, what do you think about? And he says, we're fine. There's, you know, basically there's not an issue. Well, that was the beginning of the end of all of a sudden there's more. You can only have one voice. And from that day on, you know, Jimmy just kind of had his guard up, and that's when Jerry started, having his weekly press conferences, and he was serving steak. I remember that. He was serving the media steak. It was the best press conference in time to come. Half of those guys come just to eat. But he filled the room. He filled the room.
FanDuel Sportsbook is hooking up new users with an epic Olympic bonus. Just place your first bet of at least $10 on any Olympic sport and get a $200 bonus. That's a bonus up to $200, regardless of the outcome of the bet. To get you started, here are my Olympic picks. U.S. men's basketball to win the silver. I know I said it. The silver. Remember, you'll get the bonus on any Olympic event, baseball, soccer, track, doesn't matter. When you place your first bet of $10, that's it, or more, between July 19th and July 27th. Promotions like this are just one of the reasons I love betting with America's number one sportsbook, FanDuel. Listen, it's easy to use. It's very safe and secure, and the payouts are fast. You get paid generally little as 24 hours. So download the FanDuel Sportsbook app. The promo code is Colin, C-O-L-I-N. It's what I use. FanDuel Sportsbook app, promo code Colin. I'm on it every day. And go for the gold today. That's promo code Colin, C-O-L-I-N. 21 plus and present in Colorado, Indiana, or New Jersey. Must wager in designated offer market. $10 first deposit required. $150 max bonus. See full terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gaming problem? Call 1-800-522-4700 in Colorado. 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana. And 1-800-GAMBLER in Jersey. Do you remember the moment Jimmy said, I can't do it anymore?
You know, it was interesting. After the second year, I was at the Bears. North Turner had just left. And remember the first part of this story now, our noon jogs. And we did these jogs at Pitt when I was, Jimmy and I were assistants. We did these jogs at Oklahoma State. We did these jogs at University of Miami. So this was nothing new. This was his, he wanted to have his guys, his inner circles, he called them, get around. And when I left, Norv left, Tony Wise, the line coach, left. We were out on Jimmy's boat, and we were down in Miami, and it was me and him and the wives and our attorney, and we were just sitting there, and we had been sipping a few Heinekens during the course of the past 10 hours, I think it was. And Jimmy said, boy, this is a challenge. You know, he says, fun of this thing is really, I'm really having a challenge with this. And he didn't go any deeper. And then we were up in Orlando at the league meetings, and that's when everything broke loose. Jimmy and Jerry had some words. We were at the meetings, and we used to sit together at all the NFL meetings. So I was waiting for him down by the lobby, and he came down, and he had that look on his face. And I said, meetings this way. And he says, not my meeting. And he was heading for the door, and he was driving a Corvette then. And he jumped in that Corvette and gone. And he left the meetings. And so I went in and I started saying, what happened? And that's when they said that, you know, the comment that Jerry made in front of the media that he could get 500 guys to coach the Dallas Cowboys and win a Super Bowl. And one of the media guys or somebody, I'm not sure who, called up to Jimmy's room and said, well, you're missing a good one. Let me tell you what was said. So that kind of was, but I think at that point, Jerry believed that he could win, Colin, and do it without Jimmy Johnson. And Jimmy was the guy. If Jimmy wasn't going to be the guy and he wasn't going to be the voice, he wasn't going to share that with anybody.
Well, Barry won for a couple years, and then over time, I thought Barry was a little over his head. You know, I was saying something today. If you look at the NFL, 13 of the 14 highest paid Cowboys, Dave, are players they drafted. Now, that would seem like the right thing to do. But the truth is, teams that are much better than them, Kansas City, Buffalo, the LA Rams, Seattle, many of their top players are not guys they drafted. Their loyalty is the best player available. And I said, when I look at the Cowboys, I see it's almost like Walmart, the Walton family. It's a very insular business, and they don't listen to a lot of outside voices. And the Cowboys, if you look at their roster, outside of Amari Cooper, it's, hey, we drafted him. We know what we're doing. We don't need your opinion, and we're going to pay him. I mean, the Rams have Whitworth and Jalen Ramsey and Matt Stafford and Robert Woods.
I think it goes back to when we were there. Because we won, we were the youngest football team in the NFL, and we won the Super Bowl. We were playing basically with a bunch of young college kids that like just playing the game. And I think that that's the foundation. That's the DNA that Jerry Jones has in his mind. And there's no doubt in my mind that that's why that happens. I mean, he believes it can happen that way. And I, you know, I talked to Jimmy early this morning because we were talking about the article yesterday and what Jerry said. And there's no doubt about it that Jerry has that blueprint of what Jimmy put together and how we did it back then. And that's how he sees it being done. And he doesn't want to waver from that much.
You know, it's funny. Jerry said, you know, Jimmy's my friend. And I kind of rolled my eyes and I thought, well, they wouldn't spit on each other. I mean, if Jimmy and Jerry were in the same room, would it be cordial? What's it like now?
Yes, it would be cordial. I'll tell you what's happened. Jimmy, you know, obviously going into the Hall of Fame, there's three Dallas Cowboys going in. For our Cowboy fans out there, they know this: Cliff Harris, Drew Pearson, and Jimmy Johnson. And Jimmy was moving ahead full speed with his little party, as everybody has parties. And Jerry and him talked. I don't know who called who. I think Jerry called Jimmy from the yacht. Jerry was out on a boat somewhere, and he called him and he said, hey, we got three Cowboys going in. Why don't we have one big Dallas Cowboy party? And let me kind of organize it. So Jimmy and Jerry, they talked within the last month or so, and that's what's going to happen. So the party is going to be a Dallas Cowboy party, and there's going to be people from the Drew Pearson, Cliff Harris era, and Jimmy Johnson era all together. And Jerry's kind of coordinating the whole thing. Again, Jerry's in charge.
You know, it's interesting. It's interesting, Dave. When Jimmy left the Cowboys, he goes to Miami. And instead of a meddling owner, he got an old quarterback in Dan Marino. So he had to battle that. And, right. You know, it's as you well know, if you'd had a decent quarterbacks, you'd be coaching and not broadcasting because you won a lot of games and got to the playoffs with a lot of C minus quarterbacks. And when you look at Jimmy, he could control in college. He could control the personnel, and he only had a low-paid AD to deal with. He goes to the NFL. He has success, but he has a meddling owner. And then Marino was – his knees were shot. He was difficult. If all things Jimmy Johnson knows today, do you think – I mean, obviously, the Hall of Fame means more than anything, so he doesn't regret his NFL time. But it does lead me to believe if you coach as well as Jimmy Johnson, and even you have to deal with owners and old quarterbacks, is college football just an easier sport to coach than pro football? Not just in winning, but you have more control.
Well, you know, the biggest love that Jimmy has by far in his heart is to the University of Miami. I believe that if, and again, we had a president down there, that there was a conflict. But I think if Jimmy could have stayed at Miami because of the lifestyle, the location, getting players, winning games, he might still be at Miami. I mean, that was one place that he didn't get tired of. And, now things have changed since then. Things have changed since I left Pitt. God, I don't know what I would have told LeSean McCoy when I was recruiting him. When his parents, it used to be you talked about education, and then you talked about football, and it's like my first year of Pitt coaching college football. I had my Pitt national championship ring on. I was proud as heck of that. I'm in a kid's home, and all of a sudden they want to know about what schemes we're going to use, and the parents want to know how quick can my son be a number one draft pick? And then they got into what type of education are we going to get? I walked out and I told the assistant coach, this is the last time I'm wearing this Pitt National Championship. I'm going to start wearing my Super Bowl ring because these kids, the priorities have changed. Well, now, and I'm talking to college coaches because I'm going to do a Big Ten show every week right here on BTN. So I'm talking to coaches now. And now the recruiting thing, it's how quick can my son play from a parent standpoint? What type of system? Tell me about the education, and then what can my son make for his likeness and his image? That's a nightmare for coaches. And everyone talked about what Nick Saban said the other day about his quarterback, that he's close to $1 million in endorsements or whatever you want to call it. I think that was a great recruiting ploy by Nick Saban. Nick's acting like he don't like it, and probably deep down he doesn't. Because I don't think any of the old school coaches like myself or Nick, would want to deal with that right now. But he used that as an unbelievable. And I read that thing and I started laughing, saying, if you're a kid, every kid's going to want to go to Alabama. This kid hasn't played and he's going to get $1 million. I mean, it's insane. It truly is. I don't know how these kids are going to handle it. It's going to be interesting. Yeah. We used to get $15 a month is what we got when I played for laundry. Now these kids, and I couldn't manage that. I couldn't manage $15. I'd blow it all down at the local pub.
Dave, circling back to the Jimmy Jerry stuff, because it really is one of the great, estranged, difficult, glamorous relationships in league history between an owner and a coach. And if I said to you, explain Jimmy Johnson's greatness in a paragraph. What was it?
Number one, that he was he was very intelligent. One time we were talking about the salary cap. Okay, when it was just starting to happen, the Plan B, they called it. And we were sitting there going over it, and he was studying that thing. And I said, I think we were down at the Senior Bowl or something. And he says, you know what? I'll be done with this in a minute. I said, what are you doing? He says, I always try to know more when I'm in these meetings, know more or as much as anybody in the room, whenever the topic might be. If it's draft, I want to know more about the draft. If it's salary cap, I want to be on top or know more about the salary cap. And I think Jimmy took a lot of pride in that. And then his big motto, you know, when I went to work for him, he says, Dave, I'm going to give you an opportunity to be as good as you want to be. And if you want to take that opportunity, come work with me, you know, and he held true to that. And when I went out and interviewed for a head job in the NFL and it didn't work out, my first interview, when I came back, Jimmy was so bent out of shape. That's when he promoted me to assistant head coach and gave me a big raise and everything else at the Cowboys. I mean, he's been loyal to his people. And I think that we go the extra mile for him. And he treats his players that way, too. So his people skills, and you know, I think are off the charts. He knows how to get the most out of people. And the other side is, I can remember going to him and saying, hey, boy, this, are you sure about this guy? I mean, and he says, you know what, Dave, he's doing two things that really help us win. The one thing that drives you crazy and drives me crazy, yeah, but the two things that he can do to help us win, in my mind, he says, we need those. You know, so he had a way of, you know, some people will get bent out of shape and the guy is not good enough or he's not the type of person to fit in, get somebody else. Where Jimmy would always look at it and say, hey, what's the pros and cons of this thing? And how can it help us and help me? So he just, smart guy, great psychologist.
And go to Jerry Jones. You had Wayne Huizenga, Jerry Jones, and the Halas family. What do you think, when you look at Jerry, was there something about him that you thought he did better than the other owners that you had?
Outside the box thinker. I sat in those NFL owners meetings, Colin, and the very first one, and they have one session every year where it's the head coach, the commissioner, and the owner. And I was at the Bears, and I was sitting next to Mr. McCaskey, and Jerry was in there. Jimmy was still coaching them. And they were talking about renewing the beer advertisements with the league. And they were talking about how loyal the company that they had was. And Jerry put his hand up and said, has anybody in here talked to company X or company Y? Have we found out what they might give us? And they said, no, these people have been loyal. We're going to stay with them. Jerry changed the name just on Texas Stadium. He went outside the box and he put the brand up there of a different, if you remember that whole thing, he kind of broke away from the NFL and says, I'm going to do what I got to do to make the most money. And when the TV contract came up a few years later, Jerry was right in the middle of it. And all those owners, they figured out real quick, this guy thinks outside the box. He's not the old traditional NFL way and he can make us a lot of money. And that's exactly what he did. When I think of the success of the NFL right now, the first thought that comes to my mind, Jerry Jones thinking outside the box. He came to Jimmy the night before the Super Bowl, our first Super Bowl. Jimmy tells me, and he came down the night before the game and he had these jerseys. He had them made up and he holds up Emmett Smith's jersey and Jimmy in the room and it's got the stars and stripes. It looks like an American flag. And Jimmy says, what's that? And he says, I was thinking we wear these tomorrow for the game. He says, you realize we beat the Bills? We're going to beat them. He says, and you know how much money we would make selling jerseys? Jimmy says, God, Jerry, you know, if I put this in Emmett Smith's locker, he may not get dressed for the game. You know, this guy does everything the same way every time for 24 weeks. But the point was that's how he, Super Bowl, all the hype, everything going on, he was thinking outside the box, how could I capitalize on this?
I want to ask you, Dave, before we go, two issues. Aaron Rodgers, how would you, if he comes into camp, how do you play it, Dave? Do you pretend like it never happened? Do you address the team? Do you just address Aaron? I mean, God, it's the elephant in the room. How the hell does a head coach address this thing going forward the first day he shows up?
The problem that I would have is, and I've always believed this, the minute that people start talking about retiring, they've probably retired. Or the minute they start talking about, and I'm looking at Aaron Rodgers and I'm thinking, if he is talking about not coming back to Green Bay and not being part of this team, and then he comes back, You know, and I know it's a job, and I know he's a winner, and he's a talented player. But God, I mean, there's a big part of this game that relies on a guy's heart and a guy's doing the extra. And it would make me wonder. Now, I don't think there's a problem at all with LaFleur, the head coach, and Aaron Rodgers. I think their problem, they may still be communicating behind the scenes. I don't think that's going to be an issue or not. But if I'm in that locker room, I don't know. I would be concerned that how are these other players truly looking at Aaron? I mean, Aaron, are you all in with us? Or is this a one and done? It's not going to be easy.
Listen, I could see Aaron just trying to avoid getting hurt.
Oh, that's what I'm talking about. Absolutely. Oh, yeah. No question. I mean, you know, avoid being hurt. You know, would he like to win a Super Bowl? Absolutely, he would. You know, but it would concern me because, you know, and I've had those players, coach, I'm going to retire. And then all of a sudden they come in and says, coach, I'm back. I'm with you. And they come back and it just never is the same. It's just never the same. And for it to get to this way, you know, and I don't know. I mean, you know, what are the options? You can, I look at the draft. They've got an offensive, they signed a center. They signed a receiver from Clemson, you know, an offensive tackle. They've given them a little bit of support. I think his chances of winning at Green Bay are as good as any place in the league. You want to go to New Orleans? Now you're talking about Tom Brady every week. I mean, where do you want to go? To Denver? And you got Mahomes. I mean, there's no, right now, he's the guy in the NFC Central. You know, I mean, it's, you got Cousins and you got a new guy at the Bears. You got, so I don't see there being a better avenue for him. Obviously, winning is a great deodorant. You know, he comes in, they win some games, Colin. Everybody's going to be happy. But, you know, at some point in the season, when you have that adversity and you got to reach down in there a little deeper, I just don't know what's there. I talked to people at Tampa about a month ago, and they said, when Tom Brady, God, they said, when he walks into the building, I don't care if you're a player or coach or trainer or weight coach, everybody's on eggshells. Because they know that Tom is just so, I'm into it. Hey, did you watch that blitz that Minnesota ran last week? And if you're a player, or maybe even a coach, you better have an answer for him because he's watched it.
Right.
You know what I mean? And I'm serious. That's that edge that Tom Brady has. And I don't know how, you know, how's Aaron going to do extra time? Is he going to put in all the extra things that a quarterback needs to do to win a Super Bowl?
You know, Dave, three times in my career, I have left a company and I've known in all three cases, I got about 2 months to go or 3 months to go, and I know I'm leaving. And I think I'm a worker, I'm focused, I'm a driven guy. You cannot help but thinking about the next place you're going to work.
Absolutely. No question. You're 100% right. Yeah. I agree with you. And I think that's a little bit of a problem. And the players, you know, right now it's Aaron. He's the guy, but you get in there and God forbid he plays bad or something happens. And, you know, now the thought comes in their mind, boy, if he'd have been with us at mini camp or if he'd have been with us at training camp, you know, who knows? I mean, it's just not a good situation. No, it's great for the Bears. I can tell you that. I'm in Chicago and they're loving it. They are loving it. Absolutely.
By the way, is Justin Fields? He's going to obviously get a lot of snaps in preseason. If you had to guess today, will he start week one?
I'm going to say no. I don't think week one. I think he's going to be ready to play week one, and they may have a package. They did some things with Mitch early, eliminated. Package, as we call it, of offensive plays. Justin's going to have that. I'm going up there to watch him practice the 31st next weekend, next Saturday. I want to watch him practice, and I'll get around Matt Nagy and some of these guys up close and get a lot better feel for what's going on. But this thing is, to me, it's so simple. Matt, just do what the kid can do and what he's done at Ohio State and back away from this other stuff. You got a top 10 defense, maybe a top 5 defense. You got a couple good running backs. You've got, you know, quality tight ends, and receivers are as good as anybody in the conference. I mean, you don't need to overthink this thing, in my opinion. You know, do what he can do. Give him a chance to have some success, and this thing could really blossom. I really believe that.
Do you like the Bears' O-line? Because I do like Tariq Cohen comes back, Montgomery. Yep. Do you like their O-line?
They're good enough. They're good enough. I think they're solid. You know, in that division, and in the league, I think they're in the middle of the league. I think they're better. You know, the offensive line's calling. They make the improvement, and you find out about your offensive line in training camp when you're working on running the football, and that's when these guys get their confidence and get better. And that just hasn't been the case with the Bears. And then all of a sudden, it's week two. And they throw 3 interceptions, and the media starts screaming about running the ball. They decide, okay, we're going to go run the ball. And that's not really being fair to the offensive linemen, because they love to run the ball. There ain't a lot of offensive linemen in the country, anywhere, college, NFL, that if you said, you want to pass block or do you want to run the ball, run blocking is a lot easier.
Dave Wonstadt, a lot of Cowboys, little college, Bears, Aaron Rodgers. Follow us at The Volume Sports. Twitter, Instagram, rate, review, subscribe. Have a great weekend, Coach. Love talking to you.
Okay, see you.
The volume.